listeners, and welcome back to another episode of Puck Princess. As always, I am your host, Hannah. Follow me on Twitter at PatraLover, L-U-V-R, and follow the podcast Twitter at PuckPrincessPod. It is game day 7 of round 1 for the Boston Bruins. And if my hopes and dreams go to plan and I get everything done in a timely manner, you will be hearing this episode before we get the results of game 1. Will my life go to plan? That's really typically not how things go for me. But I'm here anyways. I'm excited. And even if you hear this after on Sunday morning, like typical, that is A-okay, perfectly cool with me. But I'm feeling, like, the amount of emotions I'm feeling going into another game 7 after a blown 3-1 lead is indescribable. It's, there's a lot of feelings because as every national broadcasting announcer likes to remind us during a Bruins game stream, and even not during a Bruins game stream, or broadcast rather, not really a stream, we were knocked out round 1 by the Florida Panthers last year. We blew a 3-1 lead, and we lost it in game 7. A lot of feelings go along with that. I could pull up my Snapchat memories. I could show you the pictures of me crying for days. That reminds me of a tweet I saw. Somebody was like quoting a tweet, and it was like, "What's a sports event moment that made you cry?" I'm like, ma'am, it was so recent that it's a little fresh. I can't even begin to explain to you. But yeah, the feelings of last year and how that ended, feeling very reminiscent of this year, except this time we're versus the Leafs, who are just inherently a worse team. I don't know how to slice that for you. They just aren't good, and I don't know really how we got to this point. Actually, I do know how we got to this point, but that is neither here nor there. Let's touch on some league news before I delve into just nonsensical rambling about the Bruins and games, 4, 5, 6, yeah, games 4 through 6. So let's start with the NHL. The Penguins have fired associate coach, so one of their assistant coaches, Todd Reirden. So now, if I am correct, let me fact check myself. I believe only the head coach, Mike Sullivan. I believe he's the only one on his coaching staff that still remains. I feel like the, who is their GM? Is it Kyle? I want to say, the Penguins GM is Kyle Dubas. Hold on. Dubas? Is that how you pronounce it? I don't know. I'm so bad at pronouncing, Kyle Dubas, yes. I'm so bad at pronouncing names. As we learned last episode with me trying to say Tyler Seguin's name. Seguin. It was a wild affair, okay? You had to be there. I just want to apologize in advance. This episode is going to be a lot of nonsensical rambling. I've had a day. And it's only 10 a.m. and I've had a day. And we're just a little mentally, this week at work, I had a lot of deadlines. I didn't sleep much. So we're running on fumes, and that's okay. We love a chaotic episode from time to time. I say that as if most of my episodes don't come with some level of chaos. But yes, I believe, aside from the GM, Kyle, and the head coach, Mike Sullivan, and obviously the Henry family who owns that, who also owns the Red Sox, so you can really see the trend in how he owns his sports teams. I feel like they've cleaned house other than that. I I don't think it's enough. I really don't. I think that if they really wanted to make a big change in the organization, they should have fired Mike Sullivan, or should fire Mike Sullivan, or part ways, rather. Doesn't have to be a firing, can be a mutual parting of ways. It doesn't seem like that's the direction they're going at all, because from the statements that the Penguins GM has made, Mike Sullivan has been in these hard conversations with letting go of staff from the get-go, from the sounds of it. So, you know, that's fun. I'm not a fan of Mike Sullivan. I am a Penguins fan. I've been a Penguins fan for a while. I'm not as deep as I am with the Bruins. I mean, my mental bandwidth can only stretch so far, but I've always been a Sidney Crosby fan, and I've always kept an eye on the Penguins, and if there's a Penguins game on, I'll always tune in. I don't really think I had much of an opinion on how Todd Reirden was coaching, to be perfectly honest with you. I will say, in like the last year, I haven't kept up with the Penguins as much as I typically try to. I think I'm still like kind of sitting in shock that they parted ways with Gensel at the deadline, who's now having a fantastic run in Carolina. Good for him. I've always been a Jake Gensel appreciator. I think he's a very nice guy. And I don't know. In other coach firing news, the Seattle Kraken have fired head coach Dave Haxtell, which, I don't know. I can't say I didn't, like, possibly see this coming, but it's interesting. How long was his coaching stint with them? 2021 to 2024. So he had 3 seasons coaching the Seattle Kraken. I can see why they parted ways. There's been reports that players demanded Haxtell's firing. I'm not sure the truth in that at all. But I thought he was a decent coach. But again, like, when you're not pushing the team and not getting into the playoffs, it's a hard situation as an organization, and it makes sense that they did part ways. Teams want a coach that can produce in the here and now, and that's a point I would like to bring up a little later on, when we talk about what everyone has been wanting to hear about, Jim Montgomery, but we'll touch on that later. So yeah, that's really like all I have for the league this week. We'll touch on the playoff series in a little bit. That's kind of, oh my god, Leafs in 7 is trending on Twitter. That's freaking insane. Let's talk some AHL shiz. Shiz, why did I say that? Let's talk about the AHL. And by the AHL, I mean, let's talk about the Providence Bruins. The Providence Bruins played last night, Friday, in their second game against Hartford. They played Wednesday night and lost. I don't remember the score off the top of my head. Let's see if Google can help a girl out.
Okay.
Siri, you are not allowed to be making these unannounced, what's it called? Appearances in the podcast. She's done this 2 weeks in a row. I think she's kind of a greedy bitch and just wants some of the money I'm making, which is the money of love and appreciation for you all. Let's see if it pops. It doesn't. Okay. I just know that they lost on Wednesday, and they won 6-0 last night. Branzi and Bussy with a shutout, and it was a beautiful shutout at that. Brett Harrison got a goal and an assist last night, which was awesome. I'm a big Brett Harrison fan. I also love his little twinny there, who they just kind of look alike, and they're always together. Fred Brunet. Big Fred Brunet. He's my favorite little defenseman back there. So yeah, Brett Harrison had a goal last night. Ian Mitchell had two, which was crazy. Jason Megna had one that came off of a great feed from Patrick Brown. I made a comment last night. I said, this is how it should be done, Bruins. This is how you bounce back from a loss, Bruins. Also, can we just switch out Boston and Providence? Just let the P Bruins play it out game seven. Why not? But yes, I'm so excited to see how this goes. I'd like to go to game five, because obviously where they're 1-1, there will be a game five, and I believe that one will be at home. I wanted to go to game two, but I just could not get my act together in a swift enough amount of time to do that. So yeah, I will definitely make an effort to get to game five. So if you're at game five, give a shout, let me know. But yeah, that's where that's at. I'm really excited to keep seeing how the series goes. I've had a really, really fun time watching it so far. And God forbid the Bruins disappoint me today, at least I'll have the P Bruins to keep watching. Let's touch a little bit on PWHL Boston. They are playing their last regular season game and possibly playoff clinching game today. So all of the luck to them. I haven't watched a ton of PWHL this year. I've tuned into most of the Boston games, which was my goal. That was my biggest goal to tune in, because there's only so many hours in the day and only so much time to watch hockey. I really did want to tune into more of the other teams' games. I was really a big fan of PWHL Toronto, solely because Sarah Nurse plays for that team, and I love Sarah Nurse. I've been a big fan of hers for a few years now. And I know Toronto, don't hate me. Don't hate me, okay? But I have been able to catch most of the PWHL Boston games, which I've been so impressed, and I'm so excited to see how they continue to grow in the coming years, especially next year. I'd love to be able to get to more games. I just live so far from Lowell and Saugus Arena. It is like, well, I want to say it's like almost 2.5 hours from me, which is a bit of a hike, where both Providence and Boston, I'm like an hour from, give or take, because of traffic. But yeah, no, I'm so excited to, I will be catching the PWHL game later. I'm so jealous. My friend Laura is going to the PWHL game today and then going to game seven tonight. Her parents surprised her with tickets. I'm like, that is so fucking cool. So I hope she has the best time. That's all I've got for league news. I'm saying a lot. I'm becoming very conscious of it. And I just hate that I can sometimes hear myself do that on repeat. Let's dive into the playoffs and where we're at. Oh, goodness. Okay, last we talked, it was Saturday morning. So let's touch on how that went. The Bruins played game four against the Maple Leafs, made it a 3-1 lead in the series. Don't worry, we already know how that happens. Goals came from James Van Riemsdyk with a Lowry assist, Brad Marchand on the power play with a McAvoy Coyle assist, and David Pastrnak with his first goal of the series, I want to say, unless he scored before that. I want to say it was his first goal, second point. And then the Leafs goal came from Mitch Marner, assisted by Lubushkin and Tyler Bertuzzi, who I've made it very clear publicly that I can't stand Tyler Bertuzzi. Game four was good. We rotated, James Van Riemsdyk back in for game four. He put up a couple points. He had a goal and an assist, I want to say. He looked really good. He was looking like that JVR that we saw earlier this season, because we know the second half of the season, he's been a little off, hasn't really been point producing quite as much as he was in the past. Truly, if I had to wager a guess, I would say that he's almost 35 years old, so let's keep that in mind. My best guess is that he was, I don't want to say nursing an injury, because I don't think he was injured. I just think it was precautionary, right? Something wasn't feeling quite right. And he stepped up for that. Did Johnny Beecher play this game? He did. Okay, so this was before the absolute tomfoolery that went down in Game 5. Johnny Beecher did have a rough night on Saturday, last week. He was 1-7 in the face-off circle. He had a really, really bad face-off night, which will lead us into our next discussion, but I will say Jesper Boqvist, 100% in the face-off circle. He probably only took one and probably won it very barely. I'm very, very aware that Jesper is awful in the face-off circle. No need to tell me twice. So yes, Saturday, Beecher's face-off performance, and he was on ice for the one Toronto goal, will lead us to a devastating series of events for Game 5. We'll touch on that when we get there. Also that day, the Islanders beat the Carolina Hurricanes in double overtime, with the goal coming from Matthew Barzal. The game-winning goal, excuse me, coming from Matthew Barzal. They saved themselves from an elimination and brought the series 3-1. Same thing happened with the Lightning. The Lightning beat the Panthers 6-3. I believe... was that Sergachev's game back? Because Sergachev did come back. No, it must have been Game 5, where Sergachev came back. Oh, no. Sergachev was back because he assisted on the Hankel goal right here. Okay. Yes, so that was Sergachev's first game back, which really seemed to make a difference for the Panthers and the Lightning. Or for the Lightning, rather. My friend, who is a Lightning fan, she was so excited. To have Sergachev back. He is one of their best players. So yeah, it will be interesting to see how all that plays out. And then the Stars won against the Golden Knights in overtime and brought the series to 2-1. I'm rooting so hard for the Stars. They're also going to Game 7, so I really love Dallas as a team. I think they're a really decent team of a lot of great players. Wyatt Johnston in particular, 20 years old and has just been absolutely outstanding. For someone so young who's played in all 82 games in his first two seasons in the NHL. He's had great, great seasons these past 2 years, and I'm really excited to keep watching him grow. And I think Dallas is a good spot. He just seems really comfortable on the team. I also love Jake Ottinger. Who doesn't love Jake Ottinger? But yeah. Then we had Sunday. Avs and Jets. The Avs pull ahead, make the series 3-1. Vancouver and Preds. Vancouver pulls ahead in the series 3-1. And Sunday, April 28th, the New York Rangers beat the Washington Capitals for the fourth time in a row, and we had the first official sweep of the playoffs, which was rough. But then the Oilers won 1-0, very low, low-scoring game compared to these other games that we've been seeing. Edmonton pulls ahead in the series 3-1. We shuffled on over to Monday. And the Panthers ultimately took out the Lightning in a gentleman's sweep. 6-1. The Lightning was out. They just couldn't make it happen two games in a row. I was really, really hoping for the Lightning to pull forward. I really, really would love to see a Lightning-Bruins series. I know I didn't want it the first round, but I wanted it the second round, and shouldn't that matter? Oh, goodness gracious. But yep. And the Stars won against Vegas that night and pulled the series to 2-2. That series in particular has been so close, and it's been such a fun series to follow and watch. I haven't caught much of the games. I have been following like the highlight reels and all that fun stuff. And I want the Stars to make like a good run, you know what I mean? And if I'm not mistaken, I do just want to check this out. Yeah, whoever wins the Dallas-Vegas showdown gets to play against the Avalanche, and I would die to see a Colorado-Dallas series. I think that would be so much fun. All right, it has reset. Where was I? Were we on Tuesday? I think we're headed to Tuesday. Tuesday is when the beginning of the end took over. The Bruins lost to the Toronto Maple Leafs 2-1. I do just want to verify something before I pass out any misinformation. Yes, this is where Jim Montgomery decided to play his favorite little game that I like to call fuck them lines. We abandoned all reason. Why would we stick with the winning lineup? Why would we do that? Why? We scratched Johnny Beecher. Justin Brazeau up front. The fourth line that night was Brazeau, Boakvist, Maroon. I've memed about this on my Twitter a lot. I've been like, I would love this line solely because my boy Jesper, who is a lover, not a fighter, as we know, there is a scrum and that man turns around and skates to the bench. He's gotten better. He has stayed and done the fun little hug headlock thing with some other people. But him playing on a line with two big guys to protect him, you know? Pat Maroon's done a great job of that. Especially what we saw with, I want to say it was Edmondson, who hit Boakvist and, like, threw him to the ground. And Pat Maroon came up, I'm sure you've all seen the clip, and, like, grabbed him by the front of his shirt and just threw him on the ground. I've watched that video so many times, it's not even funny. However, that line is so slow. You have those two in your bottom six. You have James Van Riemsdyk in your bottom six. It is just a snail's race down there. I'm not even going to lie to you. It's really slow, and it's not generating enough offensive speed against a team who is fast, like the Leafs. And I don't know. Then on defense, Shattenkirk was a scratch to get Grizzlick back in. I don't know. That also didn't feel like a great move. And yeah, I don't know. It just didn't work. Grizzlick just looked really flat-footed. I don't think he had an awful game. I don't think, like, he was a detrimental piece that caused us to lose. I just don't think he helped at all. I just think it just wasn't the right fit. I don't understand why you have a winning lineup and you go and change the lines. Like, even the forwards, all of the lines were different. You had Marchand, Coyle, Geeky. You had Cech, Brusque, which is DeBrusque and Zacha and Pasta, which has worked in the past, but you had Heinen, Zacha, Pasta cooking so well. There's just no forethought to me why you would change those lines. I just don't understand. And Jim said that he doesn't blame the loss on the personnel changes, and I think you were just missing Johnny Beecher in the faceoff circle, and you scratched him because he had one bad game. I'm sorry, you have Zacha and Coyle and Geeky all going, like, sub 30% in the faceoff circle, and Geeky's getting rewarded by going to the first line with Marchand and Coyle. I mean, no shade to Geeky, I think Geeky's been great, but you have all these other guys who are terrible in the faceoff circle, and you're penalizing your fourth line face-off circle guy. I'm sorry, your 1 and 2 Cs should be winning face-offs. And the fact that you're relying on a rookie on your fourth line, who isn't even your center, which, I know. Boakvist sucks in the face-off circle, gotta tell me twice. But you're relying on your fourth line rookie wing to take all your face-offs and produce, and he has one bad game and he's sat. I don't think that was the answer that Monty thought it would be. I was just really confused, you know what I mean? And this game, the Bruins started this really fun trend of just not getting any shots on goal, especially through the first period. The first period here of game 5, we had 2 shots on goal to the Toronto Maple Leafs 11. We came back a little bit and had 10 in the second and 12 in the third, but it's just crazy to me that this is what Jim thought was going to win. I'm very confused. But anyhow, we lost. Series went to 3-2. Carolina and Colorado both won their games and knocked out the Jets and the Islanders. I'm so sad for the Jets. Jets and the Islanders both got the gentleman's sweep, but I saw that coming with the Islanders. I don't think the Islanders was really a playoff team. I'm shocked they even won a game, but good for them, I guess. The Jets, though, I had more faith in the Jets. That first game, it really, really seemed like they were going to match the energy of the Avalanche so well, and it just didn't happen. And I don't know what was going on with Connor Hellebuyck. Like, the Avalanche were scoring 4, 5, 6, 7 goals some nights, and it's crazy to me that is your number one goalie in the league, and his stats just plummet in the playoffs. I'm not sure. Vancouver also lost that game. Oh, excuse me. The Predators won, bringing the series to 3-2 in Game 5 for the Preds and the Canucks. Moving on to Wednesday, you have the Stars and the Knights once more. Stars win, Dallas leads 3-2, and Edmonton gentleman sweeps the LA Kings in Game 5, unfortunately. I don't know why, the Edmonton Oilers are sneaky good. I always forget about them. I forget that they're, like, a real team that, like, does actual things. And now they're just very easily made it into the second round. I mean, they were playing the Kings, so was there really much of a fight there? That I don't really know. That I wouldn't argue. But, yeah. Then you have Thursday night. Only game is the Bruins-Leafs. And, again, we keep the lineup the same. We do filter back in Johnny Beecher. And him in the face-off that night was 33%. Frederick was 44. Coyle was 53. Zacha was 10. Geeky was 37. So Coyle did have a better night. And Boqvist was 100%. Again, it's unclear how many faceoffs he actually took, but yeah. This, and again, the first 27 minutes of this game, there was one shot on goal by the Bruins. I get quality over quantity, but if you're recording one shot in almost the first half of the game, there's something wrong. You and I both know that there's something wrong with that, and that's something to be upset about. And I was seeing some discourse on Twitter of people being like, not, like, being totally okay, like, being openly okay with the fact that we had one shot on goal in 27 minutes. If that doesn't piss you off, I don't know. That's just insane to me that is acceptable. Two games in a row, Game 5 and Game 6, one of which in your home arena where you came up flat. The Bruins did not, there was just very little effort in Game 5. Game 6, the first 20 minutes of the game, you're also just flat. There's more energy than there was in Game 5, but not enough energy for what it should be. And you were back in Scotiabank Arena. You were back on enemy ice, and maybe that will rile you up, because clearly being in your home arena didn't. I guess the ice was bad. I don't really know if that's a valid excuse for anything, but apparently the ice was bad. And I don't know. I'm baffled that in two elimination games, the effort just went out the window. And Jim Montgomery made it clear between Games 5 and Game 6 in his press conferences, I guess, that he was pissed off and he was going to be pissed off till puck drop on Thursday and blah, blah, blah. But it just felt like there was, I don't know, those players just not being motivated. And then Jim Montgomery has the brilliant idea to not hold practice between Games 5 and Game 6, and also not hold a practice between Games 6 and 7. Interesting. This is very reminiscent of last year. They had an optional skate where, I'm going to come out and say it, none of the leadership corps was on the ice for optional skate. Yes, they were in the room reviewing tape together. Yes, they were in the locker room, blah, blah, blah. Your leadership corps not showing up on ice for that morning skate or that optional practice or what have you. Swayman showed up. All of your lower six guys and all of your second and third D pair showed up. Not a single one of the leadership corps showed up. No Marchand, no Pasta, no Coyle, no McAvoy, no Lindholm. I'm forgetting one. No Carlo. Carlo, I think, was a little... I think he might have been a little off in game six. But it's... game five, excuse me, because they had the optional between five and six. And there was nothing during six and seven except for a closed morning skate at the Garden this fine morning. I hope Monty takes out the belt and cracks down. Also, just looking at this, McAvoy has been playing 26 to 29 minutes. I don't know if he's broken the 30-minute mark yet. I'm baffled that we're playing Wotherspoon 14 and a half minutes. That's crazy to me. He has been so good for you all season and all series, and we're just not playing him more minutes. I think he adds a lot of value when he's on the ice. And I think he's great in the corners, great with the puck, great at getting the puck out of the zone, especially. I've noticed when it gets trapped along the wall like that, he's had a really, really good, a really great success, dislodging those pucks and, using his body to do so. I've really enjoyed watching him progress all season. I think playing him such little minutes is very confusing. That's neither here nor there, though. Friday, the Knights tie the series with the Stars, 3-3, so they will go to Game 7, I believe, on Sunday. And Vancouver finally knocks out the Predators with a 1-0 win. One goal, that's all it takes. Are you listening, Bruins, who didn't score until the final tenth of a second in Game 6? It takes one goal, one singular goal, shot on net. Gotta shoot the puck to get there. And tonight, Saturday night, Game 7, 8 p.m. on ABC. Game 7 between the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Bruins. I think it's gut-wrenching that on Thursday we listened to Jack Edwards' final game, and they are withholding the rights to this game from Nesson. I get it. It's Game 7. It's going to generate a lot of views, whatever. I would have just loved to hear just one more from Jack. Sorry, if you can... I'm just getting a little congested over this. Jack has been the only hockey announcer that I have known for my whole life. The full 19 years he was on there, that is who we listened to in my house. There's not enough words to say to thank him for what he's done. And thank you, Jack, for everything. You have been the voice of Hockey Night in New England for years, and for that, we will never forget you. Enjoy retirement. High above the ice, we will see you in the stands. You can come have a beer with us. It'll be great. Or a soda. I don't know if he's sober or not. I don't want to assume. Come have a beverage of your choosing. I'm just going to miss him. I don't know how you replace that. And him and Andy Brickley as a duo. Jack and Brick. I'm getting a little emotional over here. Truly irreplaceable. So whoever has to fill those shoes going forward, good freaking luck. So it looks like the Bruins have started their morning skate this morning, close to the Garden. The power play units that they are practicing are DeBrusque, Geeky, Coyle, Marchand, McAvoy for PP1, and Van Riemsdyk, Pasternak, Zaka, Heinen, and Shattenkirk. So it looks like Heinen is a go for game. Oh, hold on. So there's an alternate PP2, excuse me. It's Shattenkirk, Zaka, Pasta, Brazo, Van Riemsdyk. So it that would indicate Denton Heinen may be a game time decision. And Chuck leads the morning skate. Interesting. I really, really hope that we can pull this out. I'm getting more nervous as the time goes on. Bruins, don't disappoint us. And again, I just want to apologize. This podcast is a little all over the place today. I did a very rough outline because I wanted to add a bit more organicness, more organic vibes into this episode. You know, just trying out a few different things. I can wholeheartedly say I'm not a huge fan of it. I'm not great at thinking on my feet, but let's talk about a topic that circled Twitter a lot yesterday, and that would be if the Bruins do lose to the Toronto Maple Leafs, will Jim Montgomery see a job next year? Because we saw something slightly similar with David Quinn, where he was unable to bring the Sharks much success and was fired after two seasons with the organization. Will Jim Montgomery lose his job if he blows 2-3-1 leads in a row, back-to-back seasons, which has never, ever been done in the NHL, NBA, or MLB? Really fun facts. Bruins are out here breaking records. First, I want us to take a quick look at Jim Montgomery's history. So, he started as a head coach for the Dallas Stars back in 2019. He was, I don't know if let go is the proper term. He was relieved of his duties to go to rehab because he was struggling with alcoholism. And he was able to go to rehab. He's sober. But that was during the 2019 season. So he never saw the ending or the playoffs. Then he was an assistant coach in St. Louis for a couple of years before he got the job with the Boston Bruins as head coach in 2022. How much playoff experience can you really have in the first couple of years? And he was an assistant coach. He wasn't even feeling the pressures of being a head coach in St. Louis. I'm not even sure if St. Louis made it to the playoffs those 2 years. I might have to go back and look. Because I genuinely don't remember off the top of my head. But I feel like you have to look at the history and kind of offer some grace. He's proven very clearly that he's an amazing regular season coach. And that, I feel like, translates very well from his background as an NCAA coach. He was at the University of Denver for a while. He was also, I think, an ECHL or an ESHL coach for a while there, too. And I feel like those skills transfer very well into the NHL regular season. You could argue that the Frozen Four gives off playoff vibes. You could absolutely argue that. I won't argue against it. I feel like NHL playoffs are just a totally different animal. And I think until you're in it, you have no idea how you're going to perform. I'm sure some coaches are naturally good at being in the playoffs. I feel like the playoffs is just such a different animal than the regular season. So for that, I think we should all offer Jim Montgomery a little bit of grace. Do I think the organization is going to fire him? In my personal opinion, if we lose tonight, I don't think we will see Jim fired. I really don't. I think they will at least give him one more season to see what he can do. I think you all, with this mentality that we should absolutely fire him, because there are people that have commented that his job may be in jeopardy, which I absolutely agree with. I think it's a decision on the organization's part, and I think it's a possibility, but in all likelihood, I don't think it will happen. However, there are people that are calling for the firing of him. They're like, we hate him, we want him gone 2 years in a row, blah, blah, blah. The fact that Jim was able to turn this heap of random players into a team that could go 7 games in the playoff. They still won 3 games, okay? I think that that in and of itself was a success for this season. A lot of people like to forget that this year was a rebuild year. And it was always meant to be a rebuild year. We have no money. We lost our 1-2 seed. You lost Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci, specifically in the faceoff circle. But also your 1-2 guys, you know? And they left big holes, big shoes to fill. And yes, our leadership core has been good this year. They've stepped up. Patrice Pasternak. Where is my brain today? Yes, my new favorite NHL player, Patrice Pasternak, David Pasternak, Brad Marchand, Charlie McAvoy. You have these players that have really stepped up and had huge, huge shoes to fill. And I think they've done a good job. I think the leadership group as a whole, Coyle, Lindholm, Carlo, for the most part, has done a very nice job. A newer addition, Pat Maroon's been a good guiding, influential voice on the bench for a lot of the younger players. I really, truly do hope Pat Maroon sticks around next year, because I think if you get him and Matt Patra on the bench together, get them on a line together, I think that vibe, I just think Pat Maroon could be a great little mentor. No. Matt Patra will not be the new Pat Maroon, I know that. I just think in his brain and in all of his hockey experience, I think he would offer a lot of good advice and good guidance to Matt Patra. And I'm really excited to see that, okay? However, back to the Jim Montgomery of it all. In all honesty, I don't see him losing his job. And if he does, I will be sad to see him go. But I mean, this stretches across this trend of losing these important elimination games. That comes with being spread over 2 coaches. Bruce Cassidy also had games that we lost, clinching games that we lost. Yes, it has happened 2 years in a row to Jim Montgomery, but again, it also happened with Bruce Cassidy, and I mean, they let Bruce stick around for a while. So I really don't foresee that happening. Who do I think is going to start Game 7? Absolutely Swayman, hands down. If they go with Allmark, they're stupid. I'm sorry, you have ridden Swayman this far. If you don't give him a chance to prove that he can show up in a series like this, and prove that essentially next year, if what we all think is going to happen does happen, and you don't let him prove himself that he is your first string goalie, he is deserving of that long contract extension. He is deserving of the money that I'm sure he is seeking. Then that's you're doing a disservice to him, in my opinion. And I don't think that is the way to go. I think you should keep riding him the way you have. And then I think if, by some grace of God, we make it to round 2, you do the same thing. Rotate once, see who's hot, and ride it. And I think that if I had to wager a guess, if we make it there, I think Allmark will be hot. He's always played a little more hot versus the Panthers in the regular season. He's won 3 of his last starts against three of his four. Why is the sentence structure so difficult for me right now? He has won 3 of his last 4 starts against the Panthers over the last couple seasons. Swayman, I want to say, is 1-for-3. One of which was an overtime loss. But I think that you should just ride who's hot right now. And right now, I think abandoning Swayman isn't the answer. So, those are my many, many thoughts. And now we're going to move into my favorite segment. I will move into all of your comments, questions, concerns. Well, I hope you don't have concerns. I haven't been here long. So This first one comes from Jordan, of course. Jordan, who always has the funnest topics and questions. She will 100% win that award for having the most interesting and fun questions. She says, I love you. I love you so dearly. And today she would like to hear the Bruins and what Taylor Swift era they're in. Fantastic question. I would love to answer that for you. Let me pull up my handy dandy roster. I always wonder if you all can hear my keyboard clicks in the back. All right, Johnny Beecher. Johnny Beecher is in his fearless era. He is just starting in the world. He's flourishing. He's fearless, and he's a little baby. He's not a little baby. He's 22 years old. He's as old as I am. He's 23, excuse me. His birthday was recently. He's my age. So 2001 babies, rise up. he's in his fearless era. He's a little carefree. He's having fun. I love it. Jesper Boqvist. This is an interesting one. I've been thinking a lot about this, and I want to say that Jesper is in his 1989 era. He is just hanging with his friends. He has a good community here. He seems happy. It's giving 1989 era. It's giving just me and my girls, you know? Although he does have a lovely girlfriend named Frida, who, I mean, I've always been a fan of Jesper, but Jesper, can you fight? His girlfriend is beautiful. And she has this little dog. I believe it's her dog. I don't think it's their dog together, because she posts it more than he does. And she has so many pictures on her Instagram of Jesper, and it's this little white, like, rat dog looking thing. It's really cute, though. And I just never would have pictured Jesper owning first of all, he strikes me as a cat person, but also I never would have pictured him with a little rat dog like that, but it's just so fitting now that I've seen it and I can't unsee it. You know what I mean? So yes, Jesper Boqvist, 1989 era. Justin Brazzo. I want to say he is in, I'm going to give Justin Brazzo Midnights. Justin Brazzo is, he's on his first NHL contract at 26. This is kind of the start of a new chapter in his life. I don't see him ever going back to the AHL. I really don't. I think he's too valuable, and with more regular season experience and enjoying the playoff experience that he does get up here, I think that he'll be great. And I think Midnights really just kind of signifies that new beginning and that I don't want to say mourning of his old life, because I mean, that's what Midnights is to Taylor Swift. But I think in this context, saying he's mourning his past, I don't think that's right. I think that he is grateful and thankful for what he has going on. And what he had in the AHL and, what's that league below the AHL? It's the Maine Mariners League. ECHL? Forgive me if that's incorrect. And I think he's in his Midnight's era. I think he is on the horizon of something great. Charlie Coyle. I can't say that. Now that we have the Tortured Poets Department, I can't say that Charlie Coyle's in his lover era, because being in his lover era is not what we once thought it was. I want to say he's in his lover era of the past, before the Tortured Poets Department. Like, BTTPD, before Tortured Poets Department. Alas, I can't do that. Interesting. I don't know then. I'm just going to go with it. I'm going to go with Charlie Coyle is in his lover era. He has a beautiful baby girl who is so cute with his wife. I think her name's Danielle. Their daughter is so cute. He's such a girl dad. And he's just, it just seems like he's loving life. And he's improving so greatly in his role here on the team. He's become a leader. He's had a great season points-wise. Jake DeBrusk. That man's in his reputation era, and I will not be explaining further. Trent Frederick. Interesting. Interesting. Also in his reputation era. No further questions at this time. Morgan Geeky. Morgan Geeky is another one that I think he's in a new environment. He's just happy, you know? I'm gonna go back to Fearless here. Because he just has such a different vibe than when he was in Seattle. He's having such a great season, and he's just happy to be here. Danton Heinen. This one might be a little controversial. I don't know. Danton Heinen is the tortured poets department. He's come full circle. He started here in Boston. He left for a while, played for the Penguins last season, has played elsewhere. And he decided that he wanted to wait around in Boston for them to have the money and space to sign him this season. He didn't entertain any other team. I don't know what his offers looked like. I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but Danton Heinen, and I feel like the Tortured Poets Department as an album, it's wrapping up the last 10 eras. It's giving us the closure that we need on the past, and giving Taylor that closure she needs on the past to move forward and really start anew without dwelling into the past. She has completely closed that door. And I feel like Danton Heinen has really, he's come full circle, and he wants to be in Boston, and he's here for that. I really hope he plays tonight, too. We miss him. Jacob Lauko. Oh. This man's in his red era. He is just, I don't know. He's not quite super confident in himself. Because I think for if we're referring back to Taylor Swift, I think from her red era to her 1989 era, where in 1989... she really just embraced herself and her friends. And yes, we know that there was other stuff going on in the background, and that led to reputation and all that. However, I think that Lauko's kind of, he had his Fearless era last year, had his rookie year. He's in that transition. He hasn't quite built the confidence that we're looking for in him quite yet. He himself has said it in interviews, he has been inconsistent this season, and I think next season, with a little bit of, you know, mindfulness, he could hit that 1989, he's like good in himself era. And I think right now he's in this red era, he's in a transitional era, if you will. Brad is in his Evermore era. Brad Marchand, his whole career, had his best friend by his side. Marchand and Bergeron were thick as freaking thieves. And now, Brad has to learn... why am I tearing up at this? Brad has to learn what life after Bergie is. We saw it in their hug at the end of last season. It was heartbreaking. And I think of songs like maybe in the beginning of the season or the end of last season, Brad may have been feeling right where you left me. Help, I'm still at the restaurant, still in the corner I haunt, things like that. Maybe now he's moved a little bit into the happiness of it. There's happiness after you, but there was happiness because of you, and he's mourning, and he's accepting that, you know, this is life after Bergie, and that's okay. He can move on. So yes, Evermore. Pat Maroon. Oh, Pat Maroon. I think Pat Maroon's all the eras. I think you could pick different moments, and Pat Maroon is every era. my throat's a little dry. Sorry. Interesting. I don't know. Pat Maroon. Is Pat Maroon in his reputation era? Is Pat Maroon coming in as the oh, Pat Maroon's in his Reputation era. Pat Maroon came in here as a quote-unquote villain because we all hate him. Or hated. And then he just endeared us so quickly and made us fall in love with him so fast that here we are. Pat Maroon's absolutely in his Reputation era. David Pasternak. Oh, goodness. I don't know. Is David Pasternak also in his Lover era? He had his beautiful baby Freya. He's now engaged to his now fiance, Rebecca. David Pasternak's in his Lover era, okay? Matthew Patra's in his debut era. He is just careless. He's letting that curly hair flow out in the sunshine. He's got a little southern twang. No, he doesn't. He's from Ontario, Canada, but that's okay. He's in his debut era, and he will be in his Fearless era next season, mark my words. James Van Riemsdyk, JVR. What era are you in, JVR? JVR is in his... I don't know. Maybe JVR is also in his Tortured Poets Department era. He is, he had 1,000 games this season. He's really had a lot of closure this season, I think. Tortured Poets Department. Pavel Zaka. Huh. That's a lot of silence, I'm sorry. I'm thinking really hard on this one. My gut is yelling at me to put him in his Speak Now era. Pavel Zaka was a bit, forgotten about in New Jersey. He's come to Boston. He's flourishing. He is, again, not quite in his 1989 era yet. I wouldn't say he's in his Red era. I think Speak Now is a good fit for Zaka. I can't explain it. It's just a vibe, okay? Brandon Carlo. Brandon Carlo is in his 1989 era. He is just living life. He's having a good-ass time. He's just a happy little golden retriever type of guy. And we love that for him. Derek Forbert is in his Folklore era. Why is Derek Forbert in his Folklore era? Derek has had a lot of sadness and hardship this season. He lost his beloved dog, Darla, who we all loved. He went through 2 surgeries. He played most of the season through an injury that required 2 surgeries to repair. He's gotten a lot of online criticism of his game, and I think he truly is in his Folklore era. And I hope next season, whether that's in Boston or wherever he may be, he flourishes. I just want that man to be happy and to find some happiness. Matt Grizzlick. Matt Grizzlick is in his Lover era. That man loves his dogs. That man loves his girlfriend. That man is just in his Lover era. And he's, again, just a little golden retriever. Hampus Lindholm is giving Reputation era. Hampus Lindholm is giving I'm back with a vengeance. You will love me, although most of you hate me, but you'll love me. I can't explain it further. Mason Lowry. He is in his debut era. He's learning. He's having fun. He's a very smiley guy. Charlie McAvoy. Chuck is maturing. Chuck is stepping up into a leadership role. And Chuck is in his Evermore era. These are his eras after his time with Chara. These are his moments after, again, after Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci. These are post-Bruce Cassidy era. This is the Jim Montgomery era. He's Evermore. Did I say Evermore? Is that what I said? I literally forget. Wow, that's sad. We're going to go with it. Andrew Peak, he is Midnight's. Midnight's Tortured Poets Department, right? He left Columbus. He's come full circle. He is in an environment where he is thriving, unfortunately injured at the moment, but thriving. Since that man stepped foot in Boston, he has done nothing but show up and show us exactly what he's made of. And he's done everything in his power to earn his spot here. And that man will have a permanent spot in the 6D pairs next season. In the six defensemen, rather, 3D pairs. That man's said goodbye to Columbus. It was a bad environment. It was not a good fit for him. And he's in a good spot, you know? Kevin Shattenkirk. Shatty. I want to say Shatty's in his fearless era just because that man just is just so happy. He's such a guiding force, so it's not quite... I don't know. I'm going to go fearless. It's a gut vibe. Parker Weatherspoon. I don't even know. Parker. He's giving me Evermore folklore vibes. He's giving me a little sad Tortured Poets Department vibes. These next two, you're not going to want to hear. So if you are sensitive to talking about the potential trigger warning end of the goalie tandem, please just fast forward like a few minutes. I have to talk about it. It's the vibe I'm getting. Jeremy Swayman is giving Tortured Poets Department. Jeremy Swayman has spent time in the AHL. He has spent time as the second string goalie for the Bruins. He has earned his way into a 1-to-1 game rotation with Linus Allmark. That's his best friend, that he's Uncle Sway to Linus's kids. And most likely, if the trade deadline was telling it all, most likely we will see Allmark involved in a trade this offseason. And it's the end of the eras for Sway. Because Allmark has been here for all of these eras for him, right? And now he's going to have to be the big guy. It will most likely, if I had to take a guess, him and Bussy would be the tandem next season. Because Bussy's really earned that spot. But I don't know. I mean, anything can happen in training camp. It's sad. It's hard. Also, you can't tell me Who's Afraid of Little Old Me is not so Jeremy Swayman coded it's not even funny. Linus Allmark is in his lover era. Linus loves his wife. He loves their two beautiful, beautiful children. He loves Jeremy Swayman. And that man is just so full of love. It literally breaks my heart. Again, trigger warning. Don't listen to this if you're sensitive to the goalie hug and all that. But if the Bruins lose tonight, we will have witnessed the last goalie hug without even knowing it. And I was sitting in bed last night, right? And I'm like thinking about it. I'm sorry. I'm like on the verge of tears. I can't contain it. I was laying, and I know this is so stupid, but it's we've become so attached to this tandem. And do you think, like, when they hugged at the end of game four, do you think that they knew that that was the last time? Oh, goodness gracious, I'm crying. This is very upsetting. It breaks my heart. It shatters my heart, and I need them to win today so that we can see at least one more goalie hug. And have proper time to say goodbye. I don't even care if we get swept for nothing. I mean, I'll care. But just knowing that we get one more shot at it. Oh, goodness gracious, I'm very upset. Whew. Okay, let's dive back into these lovely questions from all of you lovely people. Next and final set of questions is from Shada. Please forgive me if I say your name wrong. Your fave Bruins moment from the playoffs so far, funny or whatever? My favorite moment so far. I mean, obviously I have to say the Boakvist assist from game one. That was amazing. And also, the Boakvist Maroon Trent line when Trent got his goal, his work in the corner there, I loved to see. I can't remember if that was game five or game six. I think it was game five. Or was it game four? I don't remember. Anyhow, you also just can't be mad at Maroon decking. oh, which one of them was it? Was it Lilligren? Into the boards, or into the bench, rather, and Lilligren ending face up. You also can't, I mean, all of my moments involve Pat Maroon and Boakvist. You also can't deny Pat Maroon helping Boakey out after, I believe it was Edmondson, decked Boakey and knocked his helmet off, and then Pat Maroon grabs the front of his, what's it called, sweater, and literally just, like, throws him on his back. I'm like, dude, you're insane, I love you. But yeah, those were some of my favorite moments so far. And of course, all the goalie hugs, duh. Monty's answers about who the starting goalie is hilarious. I think it's amazing. I agree. I think they're so funny. Him and his little riddles. I'm like, we all know. After you started Sway twice, we know. We know. Just tell us we know. I'm sure he just likes to keep us on our toes and all that fun jazz. But yeah, that will conclude episode 7 of Puck Princess. I'm trying a new outfit today, okay? Because my Bruins vibes recently have not been good. We've lost twice, so I've done an outfit change. I have the Bruins Centennial sweatshirt on with the Boakvist name and number on the back. I also have the hat on, my plain black Bruins hat. We're going to see if this fixes the problem. I think combining elements from a few different outfits, because I wore the sweatshirt game 1, I wore the hat game 4. I think together, they will bring double luck and not cancel each other out. I think it can only go up from here. And yeah, that is everything I have to say today. I'm gonna hop off this and edit this as quickly as possible and then try and get it up for you this afternoon. Also have to go to the grocery store. How lame. I hate being an adult. But yeah, that is the plan. I hope you all enjoy game 7. And if this is the last game we see of the Bruins, I will still be covering the rest of the playoffs, of course. And as soon as the Bruins playoff run concludes, I have some really, really fun off-season stuff to get us ready for free agency on July 1st. We have the draft coming up. The draft lottery is on May 7th, which is Tuesday, I think. So we'll have a lot to talk about next week. I'm really excited. Thank you for tuning in throughout all the chaos of this episode. I feel like I really just babbled for a good hour. I appreciate all of you. And sorry, my stomach is growling. I don't know if you heard that. Oh my goodness, stomach. Please, hush up. But yeah, I really appreciate all of you. Thank you for taking the time to listen. And I will see you next week. Don't forget to follow on Twitter, Patra Lover and Puck Princess Pod. And I will see you next time. Enjoy Game 7 and keep enjoying the playoffs. I love you all. Bye.